Inside the Rebel Podcast, episode 3. A very good milestone because we've done this for 3 straight weeks, so I think that's an accomplishment. And I'm excited because today we have a colleague of mine. I like to call you a colleague. I think we are colleagues.
Oh, yeah.
And a guy I like to pick his brain a ton of times, Mike Pritchard. UNLV's color analyst, of course, Joe Rigo, Inside the Rebels. What's up, guys?
Fellas, what's happening?
Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, appreciate it. Like I said, I like to pick your brain, and I like on-field football X's and O's, and there's nobody better to go to than a former NFL receiver.
Right.
So let's get started. I mean, Central Michigan, I think, right off the top, for me, that's the worst loss of Tony Sanchez's career.
Okay, I agree with that.
Just in the fashion that it happened, it was just an ugly loss. They looked disjointed, and it was just one of the sloppier games that they played under him.
Yeah, I'll be strong. I think they underestimated that team. I mean, I don't know if they prepared well during the week of practice. Coming off a defeat to UCLA where you feel good about it, you know, you feel good about your performance, even though you lost the game, and I think that's what the Rebels were going through. So there's a maturity thing still going on with this football team, I believe. And you're right. JVT, I mean, there's no excuse to go backwards like that. I do think it was the worst loss under Coach Sanchez so far.
What I took away mostly was the drops and you being a former receiver and how that affected, I think, Johnny Stanton. I think it got to a point where he felt he had to be too perfect with his throws and that kind of affected his confidence. As a receiver and then on the offensive side of the ball, how does that affect the quarterback, and how does that affect the receiver's confidence, especially someone like Devontae Boyd, who's a stud?
I was very surprised Devontae Boyd dropped that many passes. But then when I looked at it and I thought about it, and even during the broadcast, I was notating it where it was different for him. So normally we'll see Devontae Boyd outside the numbers, but inside the numbers. Now, he did have the crossing route against Jackson State, and he turned it upfield, and great play, great throw. But this is a guy who is accustomed to catching the ball outside the numbers.
Right.
Or down the field. When you're crossing the middle from the slot position, that ball's on you quicker. And it's coming from the line of scrimmage where there's a whole bunch of defensive linemen, the bigs, waving their arms. And so picking up the ball and trying to focus and pluck it out of the air, that's different. And so I noticed that about him. He was fighting it more so than just plucking it and catching it and running with it. So maybe for a quarterback, you start to feel like, I got to do too much. Or I'm going to do too much, or am I doing too much? And so that just consumes you. And to me, that's what Johnny Stanton looked like. It looked like everything was starting to consume him as opposed to him, you know, Johnny Stanton letting the game come to him.
Right.
A couple of those throws were, a lot of them I thought were behind receivers too for him.
They were.
What is it with him that you saw at least? Was it something mechanic-wise? Was he not comfortable? I mean, I know he got pressured a little bit, but it wasn't anything like it was in your face to make you skittish.
Yeah, you know, the throws across the middle were behind guys. I think the windows are just tighter in this game than they were in other games. And, you know, you go through practice, and certainly you can mimic the look or give the quarterback a certain look, but in the game, the windows are different. Yeah. And then maybe there was a guy flashing. Maybe he had pressure or he felt the pressure. He understood the pressure and just wasn't accurate with the ball. I think Johnny Stanton, it's pocket awareness, really. And it's confidence in your offensive line. It's confidence in your scheme. And once he gets that confidence and he builds and, you know, is consistent with it, then you'll see more accuracy and then you'll see a guy poised in the pocket a little bit more.
I want to flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. And the thing that stood out to me the last 3 weeks, actually, from the Jackson State game through the CMU game, the secondary, they don't seem to have good ball awareness. And it just seems like there's too much confusion as far as when they have inside shade, you know, as a receiver, you know, you don't let anybody get inside of you as a DB. But yet I've seen that with McTyer and with Hugh. They let guys get inside of them, and the safety's nowhere to be found, and they have that inside shade. Is there something going on with miscommunication back there, or is it a talent issue?
Well, there is occasions when it is miscommunication. I mean, there were some breakdowns in that game with coverage. I mean, if you got quarters coverage and you're thinking you have safe help from your safety, and your safety disappears on a shallow cross route or basic cross route, then you're in trouble. What you're speaking of, though, I did notice that too, Joe, where you are inside shade, meaning you don't have safety help, but you forget about that.
That's true.
But think about that for a minute. So you're out there on that island, right? And you're lined up against a wide receiver that just wants to beat your ass, right? So you're lined up and you got inside technique, understanding I need to use a sideline to help me out because I have zero safety help. You forget it at the snap. And I think you're right. Now, that's something that can be fixed. It should be fixed immediately. But it's also a confidence thing. I think these players, you know, once you understand the concepts of a defense, think about that first before you start to play,
right?
Before you execute. And a lot of guys, a lot of young guys, they seem to forget that for some reason.
Part of the reason why they were having so much trouble is because there's zero pass rush with this team.
Right.
Is it a matter of talent, like Joe mentioned, with the secondary, or is it a matter of scheme? Because I've seen plays where they're even bringing six, they're still not getting pressure.
No, six, five, dogs, and all that stuff. It is a talent issue. I mean, you got to be real with it. They just don't have an edge pass rusher. They thought that Valoaga could be that guy now that he's back on the field, but, man, he's getting mauled.
But what about the kid, the freshman from – and his name – I'm having a brain fart with his name. The kid that was supposed to go to Syracuse that came in that is an edge rusher. I mean, he's got that great burst with that first step off the line of scrimmage. He's been a non-factor. Same with Hall, who comes in from Illinois. He's also been a non-factor. And they look like dudes in spring.
They look like dudes in spring. But again, the game changes everybody. When the lights come on, we really find out what you're made of. And the coaches probably expect bigger things from those players. It's so tough as a coach because – you can see it. Mm. You know, maybe it flashes in practice, and then it frustrates you because you don't see it in the game. Like, what was happening? Where's the disconnect?
Yeah.
Why is there a disconnect? So I think they're working on that, but it's incumbent on the player, too, to watch themselves on tape, man, and say, look, I want to be better than that.
Right.
Drive myself to be better than that. I cannot be mauled by an offensive tackle. You know, there's a lot of guys, 10 other guys, depending on me right now.
Especially with the way they played against UCLA. Mm-hmm. I mean, they actually, if they played the way they played against UCLA, against Central Michigan, they win the game, I think, going away.
Sure.
There may have been a hangover, do you think?
Yeah. Isn't that ironic? Because we were thinking Central Michigan might have a hangover from their big victory against Oklahoma State. But maybe there was the Rebels. And I do think that they underestimated CMU. Mm-hmm. You're looking at a team out there in the MAC, and they're smaller, but no, these guys had great athletes over there. You're talking about Antonio Brown went to that school from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So,
J.J. Watt went there initially,
before transferring to Wisconsin. So they get talent. I mean, that whole area around Flint, around Lansing, I mean, you got Michigan State and then Michigan Ann Arbor down the road. So you have all that information, all those athletes in that part of the country that's going to take pride in their performance. And that was a long trip for the Rebels, but I was hoping to see more consistency or have them build upon the performance that they had against UCLA.
Now, I want to stay in Michigan and real quick. I know it's a UNLV podcast, but let's talk about your Buffaloes.
Let's do that. Yeah.
They actually, for that first half, really the first three quarters, looked really good against Michigan. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the program and where it's going right now?
I like the direction. I do. And speaking of that game, it's funny because I said, Russ, handle the mic the first quarter, because now my Buffs. No, we were locked in on the Rebels game. But, no, I'm happy with the direction. So what's happening with UNLV is similar to what happened to CU, but CU's in the Pac-12. So there was an investment of $150 million on new facilities, upgrades, and then all of a sudden all this support came on the program because of our athletic director, Rick George, is really has this initiative of sustained excellence, right? And so The way we need to get back to the glory days is to think about investment. And so we have to fight, and we have to get into this arms race with facilities, uniforms, and be an exciting program without wins. And that's what they did. They've dressed up the program. Now they have to get the wins, and there is the pressure. So as the pressure's on Coach McIntyre for sure, UNLV's doing that right now. They're dressing up the program with a new facility, hopefully a new stadium, who knows. The uniforms, they look great on game day.
Yeah.
Now the wins need to come now, right?
Right.
So then all of a sudden the pressure is going to start to mount. So, I mean, I like the direction of CU, but UNLV is right there. They're in lockstep with a similar direction.
Going back to the game, what did you think of the running game? Because obviously Lexington Thomas is 85-yard run, but I think it goes back to what you mentioned is they underestimated him because that defensive front was physical and they were nasty up front.
Yeah, they were. Think about this. They went to Stillwater, Oklahoma, and contained their running game to make it difficult. And they almost lost the game. Talking about, Oklahoma State, they did lose the game. But CMU, they should have won that game in regulation. Mm. They fumbled the ball deep in their own territory, which led to a score. Coming off of that, even though CMU gets the victory, when you shut down a Big 12 team like that that wants to run the football, you feel pretty good about that. And talking to some people with that program, they take pride in stopping a run, and they knew if they can stop UNLV's run or contain it, force them to throw the football, that was going to be not the strong suit for the Rebels at this point with a new quarterback and certainly not a prolific passing attack. So that's what they did. That was their game plan, and it worked.
So I'm not pressing the panic button right now, but I'm curious. How short is Johnny Stanton's leash?
Not short. Yeah, it's, you know why? Palandek is the third quarterback. Yep. Whether yeah. is he hurt?
Well, that's what they're saying. Yeah. They're saying it's a shoulder.
Uh-huh. Shoulder arm deal, yeah.
I'm like you, Mike. I don't think he's the backup. I think there is, from my opinion, and I can't speak what's going on in the locker room, and I never would, but I think there is a disconnect between Palandek and his teammates.
Okay.
And I think Johnny has the team rallying around him.
He does. Mm-hmm. He does. And Johnny's a strong quarterback. He just needs to focus mentally. Mm-hmm. And I think the coaches are working on his mental preparedness. If Johnny Stanton, and this has plagued UNLV for a while, they need a strong-minded quarterback. They need a Tate Martell. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you,
somebody with that
swagger
and that arrogance,
yeah. That cockiness. This is my team, and coach wants that.
Well, what about? I mean, to be honest with you, I wasn't even referencing Kurt Ballendeck. I was referencing the Armani Rogers era.
Well,
is there any chance that we see him this year?
No,
nah.
I mean, because
you talk about a kid
chance.
With swagger and who actually looks like a physical quarterback. I mean, that kid's got the body for it. He looks like he's going to be the guy.
I played with his dad, Sam Rogers, so he's a buff,
right?
And I talked to him during training camp. He said that Armani could be ready if they need him. And I said, would you prefer that he redshirt? He said, look, it's on the coaches, but my son will be ready when he's needed. Now, there's a temptation to go there, right?
Yep.
You got this Porsche parked in your garage,
yeah, right?
And you're not driving it, and you're driving this truck right now.
Serviceable Johnny, truck, you know, decent truck, shape.
Right,
yeah.
right. And you're hoping that truck can get souped up. But, yeah, I mean, you keep looking at that portion, just, okay, can we wait? Can we wait? Or do you want to wait? But I think you have to watch that because you're still trying to build a program.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Palandek, I'm going to put this on your podcast. I'd move him to wide receiver.
Yeah, he's athletic.
You seen that guy run?
Yeah, and they need a body at wide receiver.
They need speed, too. Yep.
You know what's interesting is we talked about it last week, and we've seen it for the first time, was they actually put Charles Williams out at wide receiver.
Yeah.
And I covered SC when Reggie Bush was a freshman and a sophomore. Williams has a lot of the same attributes that Reggie had, especially in his freshman year.
Okay.
You can see Reggie was actually a better receiver than he was a running back in college. He may have been SC's best receiver during that era, to be honest with you. I can see Williams being that same type of guy. You can put Lex in the backfield. Now you got Williams in the slot. Now what do you do? You're going to put eight in the box? Or, you know, now Williams can get loose, or you're gonna go back into...
I like that, too.
You know, it gives Tony some options on offense.
The more creativity you can have on offense can only help you.
Absolutely.
Whether it's personnel, whether it's formation, whether it's moving a guy from quarterback to receiver or running back and play him and line him up out there because you're going to create mismatches.
Right.
And, I remember those days with Reggie Bush and, was it Lorenzo... White?
No, it was Lindell White.
Lindell White.
Oh, yeah.
He's a Denver kid, actually.
He's a Denver kid. He was a bigger physical guy, and Reggie Bush would play, you know, out wide. They flank him, but they get him on in space, basically.
Exactly.
And Williams is dangerous. Coach Sanchez has talked about this. He wants to see more carries or more touches with Williams because he's very excited about the player. But if you got a guy with the athleticism like Kurt Palandek, third at quarterback.
And the need.
I would look at him playing wide receiver right now because, I mean, think about this. You can have Devontae Boyd. You can have that speed, Palandek. He's got hands. He's a quarterback.
Right.
He understands the offense. He's a quarterback. Whether he's willing to play it and move there, that's another issue. But if he's willingness, if he has it willingness, hell, I moved from running back to wide receiver and it was 13th overall pick. So, I mean, it can happen. Andre Reed, he's in the Hall of Fame. He was a quarterback.
Sterling Sharp was another one. He was running back to wide receiver.
Exactly. So, I mean, however you want to help the team, however you want to get on the field, and if that's the way to get on the field, then maybe you should be open to that.
That's Mike Pritchard. Mitch and Pritch fame, not Mike and Pritch fame. Also, UNLV analyst. Last one before we get you out of here, because you mentioned the wide receiver position. Is that going to be an issue going forward? Do we have any idea what's going on with Brandon Presley?
I don't know. It's some issue with his lower leg or even foot or ankle or something. So it depends on what the diagnosis is there. But they are young.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that last week. I mean,
because I thought that would play into it. I mean, making the trip to UCLA, right. And I believe they only had four wide receivers on this trip as well, right?
Yeah. Well, they have more guys lined up at wide receiver, but guys that can play the position, probably they feel comfortable with four.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have some 80 numbers out there, some numbers and guys that are running through pregame playing wide receiver, but I don't know if they're confident. That's why I was like, okay, let's throw this out on your podcast. Kurt Palandek, are you open to playing wide receiver for the Rebels?
That's actually, I really like that idea. That's
I do too, cool. actually. That's, we, that's see, a great
we got,
idea.
We got a tidbit on this one. We're going to put that one on Twitter. Hey, Mike, I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, appreciate
it. Mike, appreciate thank you guys. Much,
thanks
bro.
For doing this podcast too, man.
Yeah. Awesome. You got an open door every week. You're okay. welcome to come in. We can do, you know, the Mike moment or Mike's minutes or whatever you want to call
right
it.
Right on.
Just jump on in and talk whatever you want to talk about.
Sounds good, fellas.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
All right.
Have a good show, man.
You too.
Thanks. Mike Pritchard heading out to go on to the air. I'll see you later, dude. That was good stuff.
It was.
I really appreciate it. I mean, on the field, obviously, you always want the eyes of a former player.
Absolutely.
But we got a lot to get into because I really liked it.
Hey, you know what? Honestly, JVT, we're going to have to go over an hour today, I think.
You think? That's a long one.
I think we could go a little bit over if we could push it.
Well, let's start with something light because I did want to start with this at the beginning of the show. Did you watch the broadcast?
I did, and it was it hurt my ears.
It was the worst broadcast I've ever seen in my life.
I would agree. The ESPN needs to fire the dudes that were doing it. I don't talk about firing people.
Or at least
firing
the play-by-play guy. Come on, dude. My favorite moment, Mekki Stevenson.
And he kept calling him it.
Yes. And then you could tell the color guy was like, you know, Mekki Stevenson. Like, he would say the name to make him realize that he was saying it the wrong way.
True story. At my wedding, the guy, the minister who married my wife, my wife's name is Teon. Teon, okay? And spelled T-E-O-N, okay? So he says, he kept calling her Teo.
Okay.
So he goes, "Do you, Joe, take Teo?" So I, at that you're moment, like, that's where it clicked in me. Like, my radio person came in. I had just gotten into radio. I was like, "I, Joe, Joseph, take Teon." And then he changed it. So to this day, her family, we make fun of it. So it was back to the, I mean, but I'm saying for that, and you have the public address announcer saying Mekki Stevenson.
Yes, that guy was bleeding over the whole broadcast.
And he was bad, too.
Yes.
It was bad, too. I mean, this was horrible, but that's ESPN3.
Yeah.
Now, I had to be careful about, I wanted to make sure it wasn't Trey Bender doing it. Mm-hmm. And Trey Bender is one of the best broadcasters in the business that you may or may not have heard of.
Okay.
And he does a lot of ESPN stuff. And they put him on their big ESPN3 games. Trey's great. If that was Trey, I would have texted him and been like, dude.
Like, yeah, let's calm down here a little
bit. Yeah, let's go. But it was bad. And it was so bad that I actually I stopped streaming it like halfway through the second quarter and put on Mitch and the IMG program.
Oh, okay, so you put on – okay, yeah. Yeah.
But then our stream on ESPN stopped for me for a minute. I was like, what the hell is going on? So I was stuck listening to them again. I just muted it and was like, I don't care at this point.
Yeah, it got to that point. Charles Williams with his mysterious 85-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
That was actually Lexington Thomas. Best part about that one was you could tell that whoever was running the Mountain West Conference's Twitter handle wasn't watching the game but was just listening because then they retweeted a GIF saying Charles Williams, 85-yard touchdown.
Yes.
it was just a bad game overall for the broadcast. To the actual on-field play. I mentioned it with Pritch. Worst loss, I think, in his career. I have a couple written down here. You know, like the loss at Wyoming, 35-28. They tie the game at 21-28. But give up the 64-yarder to Jacob Hollister. They give up the lead to Fresno. And then Boise, when they were just trailing by one touchdown, they end up giving up 28 in the fourth quarter at Sam Boyd.
I would agree. But I think that Fresno State one is really close. Because Fresno State's just a bad program. I mean, and we'll get into it later. That's why I'm feeling really optimistic the next couple weeks. But like Fresno State's program is bad, and albeit it was Tony and Tony and company's first year here at UNLV, and you have to get the guys to buy in and everything. But
talent's not there either.
Yeah, and this game I think this game was more disappointing for me than say worse because. You know, I felt like they can come in, and I tweeted out that I thought it would be a high scoring game, like 41-35. I thought the score was going to be something like that. And looking at it, it's just they came out and laid an egg. And it goes back to, you know, we'll talk about it again, the defense. I mean, the secondary got torched again. Mm-hmm. Now, albeit Rush, the quarterback from CMU, is a pro prospect. He is a guy that could go in day two or early day three of the NFL draft, according to scouts that I talked to over the weekend. I'm like, look, this dude is torching him, and I put out text like immediately, like, is this guy something I need to watch film on, or what's the deal? And they're like, day two, possibly, you know, late day two, maybe early day three quarterback prospect. He's legit. And I was like, oh, okay. But even with that, Rosen didn't torch him like that.
Mm.
And he's more highly touted than him. And that secondary was just beat up from the feet up, man. It was just bad.
Darius Mouton, I believe it was Cooper's second or third touchdown. Just like you guys talked with Pritch, lets the guy inside, doesn't even touch him, right over the middle in the end zone. Yeah, it was a bad game for the defensive backs. But again, we go back to it. That pass rush, non-existent. They hit Rush a couple times. He was on the grass. But really nothing threatening. And it's something that really needs to get fixed, because going into Mountain West play, if you don't have a pass rush, I don't know what's going to happen with them.
They did stop the run well, and I'll say that. They didn't get gashed. Like they'll have a couple. They had a couple runs here and there, but they didn't get hit with a long run.
Well, my thought was that, I mean, if you're Central Michigan, they went away from the run because why the hell not? We're throwing it all over the yard. My guy's getting 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, but at some point you want to control clock. Mm-hmm. You know, at some point you do want to control the clock, because you can score quick, but then UNLV, their offense does have the ability to score quick right with you. Mm-hmm. So you do want to control and give your defense a break, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. Now, they did a good job of throwing underneath and then going over the top when the need be. But for the most part, I mean, and even when Kenny Keys came back in the game in the second half, like there was a...
To be honest, I thought it got worse. I thought it was going to get better.
See, there was only a couple miscues then.
Not that I'm blaming Kenny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the first half, there was way more to me. See, that's where we disagree. Yeah. I thought Keys came in and made a little bit of a difference, especially against the run and playing up towards the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. He did really well there, I thought. And I don't know. This game was just one of those games where as I watched it, I started reading my tweets. And I wanted to definitely jump on this. And one person tweeted at me, you know, Tony needs to be fired. Tina needs to let him go. This is just like a Dave or a Rice situation all over again. I'm like, dude,
really already?
Yeah, I'm interesting. Like, yeah, really. Like he just got a $10 million gift and then was speaking at the meeting about the stadium and got
best
down near
class in UNLV football's history.
Right, yeah. Has another one coming that's gonna be better than that. Yeah. I mean, come on, like really, dude. Like, let's be real. And then another person, I'm not gonna say his name. He is a radio personality out here, and we can get into this next because we're gonna get into Johnny Stanton. Tweeted out, Stanton has a 38% completion percentage and 4 interceptions. Well, let's be honest. 4 of those interceptions, 3 of those 4 interceptions were off tip balls from hit his receiver's hands or his receivers, and that were catchable balls. Mm-hmm. The only one was a horrible throw was the UCLA game. He threw right to the safety.
Sanchez came out after the UCLA game, the one that we actually talked about where I didn't know if it was miscommunication. He looked like the route was going to get cut off. Sanchez blamed that one on the receiver. I will say the one that he threw in Central Michigan, it was another one of those balls that was behind his receiver that bounced off the left shoulder pad.
Okay, if it bounced off the left shoulder, where are your hands, though? And
well,
I'm showing you.
But if he's coming in and it's behind him, he had to turn his body.
Yeah, you hitting the mic. Do you see you dropping the mic?
Yeah, right? But either way, it's not that. I understand what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're catchable balls, especially if you have aspirations of playing at the next level as a receiver. You have to catch those balls. And I tweeted that out. Like, that was this game alone was 6 interceptions or 6 drop balls. And then how many did he have the game before that were catchable balls that were dropped? So those numbers can be misleading. Numbers do lie for the most part. But Johnny just didn't play well. As we talked about with Pritch a few moments ago, I really think that he started pressing. And he got totally away from whatever mechanics that he did have that he was improving on. And he just started just Brett Favre gunslinging it out. And I'm just going to air it out. And it just didn't work. I mean, at one point in the game felt really bad for Stanton.
Really?
I did. I'm like, this dude he's putting balls, they're catchable balls, and in my opinion, one of the top 15 receivers in college football, and Devontae Boyd had 4 drops. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see
that
from him.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And I agree with Pritch. It's a different angle with you catching the ball, especially when you move from outside into the slot. Mm-hmm.
But at you quicker.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's a way to get you freed up and get you the ball. So you got to maximize those opportunities.
Oh, there were definitely – it was a definite team effort when it came to the offense not really being up to par, whether it was wide receivers not catching balls that were thrown to them, whether it was Johnny having some throws that were off the mark, and, you know, whether it was the running game that couldn't get going. I mean, we mentioned Lexington Thomas's 85-yard touchdown run. Other than that, nothing. It was 2.6 yards per carry, 37 carries, 97 yards. It was a team effort when it came to the offense just not being – just not on the same page at all.
And I thought after Lex had that 85-yard run, I'm like, okay, he can pick up another 15 to be at 100 by halftime. Mm. Like, this is going to – okay, now they're getting the running game going. But give Central Michigan credit. They ran – their defense was like a two – I want to say it was a two-gap defense. Mm. So, in a way, what it did was it kind of eliminated the run. You have to kind of hit and chip to open up that
hole.
Their
defense tackles were playing really well. I was wee Rotson it this morning, and you could tell the defensive linemen were getting good leverage. They were taking their, they were attacking, whether it was attacking downwards or what, they were sticking those gaps, and they were playing really hard. A lot of linebackers coming in to just clean up plays like right at the line of scrimmage. It was pretty good, at least to watch for if you appreciate football.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, too, and I think this goes across the board to everybody, any team when you play in out of state or you're on the road, you can't have miscues like drops and fumbles and interceptions, turnovers, and you can't have penalties. And UNLV had, at halftime, 65 yards, six penalties for 65 yards, but it seemed like a hell of a lot more. Yep. And you it seemed like that's when it started to get away from them. This stupid penalties, pass interference here, a hold here, false start. I mean, little things like that. I mean, even the center, who's one of the best centers in the country. I know for a fact.
Freeland.
Yeah, if he was taller, he'd be looked upon as an NFL prospect. But I know CFL teams love him. Mm. I talked to a team after the first game of the year that was scouting there to scout him. And they're like, man, if he had like 3 inches in height, this dude, he's a dude.
Hey, man, Jeff Saturday, they told him he was short. Look what happened.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm just saying, and coming from a guy that's 5'5", you know, yeah, right, and a half, you know what I mean? But in the same breath, like, he had a penalty, a hold that was a sprung. I think it was either Lex or Charles with a big run up the middle. It was like a 15-yard run. They called it back, and yep, he was even like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? So it was basically the type of game film that you, as a coach, watch at your team, but then you burn it right after. Mm.
Yeah, I thought Creeler, actually, to be honest with you, I thought he got away with a tiny little hold on the 85-yard run. If you watch when he peels off and cracks down, maybe he got away with
you
it.
You hold but on every
not,
play.
Hey, we're not going to complain about that. So, essentially, I mean, is there really a lot to take from this game? Because it seemed like it's a game that really got away from them, and you're hoping that this trend doesn't continue, but I think the biggest concern coming out of it is obviously right now, your running game, obviously, like we talked about earlier, it's always going to be consistent. I think this was like a one-time deal. Let's see what they do next week against Idaho. This coming up this Saturday, which we'll get into, I guess, in a little bit. I tried to watch Idaho-Montana State.
I watched Idaho the week before. Yeah. You know what? I watched it with my nephew, who was a former D1 college player. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what do you think? And he looked at me and goes, hey, Unc, Idaho do have some fresh uniforms. That was the takeaways, and I thought they were ugly and bland.
It's got like the weird cream helmet. And
no,
the,
they changed it now. It's like a silver,
okay,
and it has Idaho in black with a little bit of gold on it, and it's they just kind of went to a bland uniform, but they're dropping down to D2, so I mean FCS, whatever you want to call it. So I mean, to lay an egg like the Rebels did on Saturday, okay, to be able to come back and play a team like Idaho, which you're probably going to put 70 points on, that'd be a good feeling. No, they will.
Okay. You're going to guarantee that?
I'm not going to guarantee it, but I think they're going to take out their frustrations on the Vandals.
You would hope so, yes.
And I you could tell Tony was pissed off. Like,
oh, yeah. You watching the post-game press conferences, which weird setup. They're just like on a grass hill down there in Central Michigan. He was not happy. I think that was the most irate I've seen Tony Sanchez. And you could tell on the broadcast, too. One of Stanton's interceptions. Was there not a sideline interference? And the look on Tony Sanchez's face when he saw that flag, he looked like he was going to murder every single person around him.
Yeah, he was pissed, dude. Yeah. And I would be, too. I was mad watching it. I mean, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah,
because
I was getting annoyed.
I thought, I'm sitting here, and I'm like, okay. Got up in the morning, made myself some breakfast, hung out with the wife a little bit. I'm like, this is cool. Okay, sit down, watch UNLV play. The wife went shopping. I believe she went shopping. She did something. And I said, cool. I sat down and I couldn't. And I have a Fire Stick, okay, and I jailbroke it. So I watch things. I watch, you know, everything for free. You know, that's the you know, whatever FCC, you can do what you're going to do. I don't care. Be like one of the other 6 million people that have one. Mm. If you don't have one, you need to get one.
Okay.
Saves a ton of money. Anyway, and I'm watching, and I couldn't get it to come on because for whatever reason. And I said, whatever. So I opened up my computer, I turned it on, and I'm watching the game. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Okay. All right. Hey, block punt. All right, here we go. Perfect. Great play. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a game-changing play.
Cool. The punt afterward, the following punt too.
Yeah, but
the punt before, excuse me, when they pinned him.
Yeah.
Where it bounces on the one and bounces backwards. I thought, I was like, okay, wow, they're going to get some bounces in this game. This actually might go well.
I did too. I got my hopes up. I'm like, perfect. And I'm actually wearing some, I was wearing some Rebel Red shorts and a white tee. I'm like, I'm dressed like the guys today.
Yeah.
And then everything else happened. It's just kind of like, and I got to a point where I my wife came downstairs and from wherever she was at after she came home, and she said, what's happening with the game? And I was like, you know, it's not going good right now. And I told her, my wife understands a little bit about football since our youngest son plays, and she's at all of the, I'm not coaching, she's at all the games or whatever. And she sat down and started watching with me. She was like, ooh. And when someone who's really not even a novice is like that, you know something's bad. And I'll tell you what, give the quarterback credit, because he was throwing balls on a dime, CMU's quarterback, Rush, I believe his
Cooper
name.
Rush, yep.
Cooper Rush. He's throwing ropes. He's throwing, you know, he's highly accurate, and he's controlling the game and the tempo at the line of scrimmage. Yep. That's something I didn't see UNLV do a lot of either. I don't know. Did you expect them to go tempo more, play fast?
I thought they did. I thought they did on their actually lone touchdown drive. I thought it worked a little bit, too. It was right after the 85-yard run by Lexington Thomas, and I kind of started to think that, all right, like you mentioned, maybe they're going to start getting the run game going here, because they had a good couple runs in there with Charles Williams, and they moved consistently, and they started going tempo, and they had that drive, but then they started getting into those third and longs, and they started going these three and outs, and they just couldn't get their offense to really put together another drive after that. So I don't think they had a chance to go tempo. I think they wanted to, but they never could, because they couldn't string drives together.
I mean, I think I agree with that. And that's where, personally, if we're doing X's and O's, like, I come out in tempo. Like, we're going, so let's go in NASCAR, whatever you want to call it. We're going. Let's go. And get out there and just – let's run it, and let's just try to see what happens.
Well, it looked like they seemed to do it, too, because he hit – was Darren Woods Jr. on that real comeback, that comeback route to open it up, and they got a first down on third and long, and they went right up to the line, and they were calling plays. But, again, you get the drop over the middle, you get a Tim Holt drop, and then all of a sudden, it's like, all right, we're off the field, punted away, and we have to get our offense going.
Yeah, and then did you see – and I know you probably did – When I knew Johnny was really out, I mean, I could tell he's out of rhythm, but I could, when I knew how bad it was when Price ran the corner route. They ran a called a smash concept where you have the outside receiver running a comeback route and then your tight end or your inside receiver running a corner route. And it's hard to defend, because especially if you're playing zone, that's a vacant area in the zone. If you're playing man, you see that your tendency is to go help. So you have options. And he overthrew Price in the corner of the end zone. I mean, he was wide open. Yeah. And I just was like, are you kidding me, Johnny? I felt bad. That's when I was like, Johnny, I feel bad for you, bro. It's not a good day.
So Idaho coming up on Saturday, Sam Boyd Stadium. They're back at SBS for two straight weeks. Next three games, home versus Idaho, home versus Fresno. Then at number 22, SDSU, first time since 1995 they've been ranked. Next three games... The next two are must-win, correct?
Absolutely.
There's no question.
No, and they should smash Idaho. And that game, I think Saturday night, it's going to be one of those games where, a lot like Jackson State, where I'll look across the press box and see you and kind of like, okay, maybe we can go talk for a few minutes. You know, because it's 53-7 or something like that. But then with Fresno State, and that's homecoming, so that has to be a must-win regardless. Plus, it's your first conference game. But Fresno State is bad.
They're boo-boo.
They struggle. One of my best friends, he's a UNLV alum, and he actually lives in Fresno. We did a radio show in Fresno together for a while.
Okay.
And he has season tickets, and I talked to him last Thursday night. And I said, well, you know, what did you see with Fresno State? And he goes, dude, they may be the worst team in Mountain West. And I said, really? He goes, they struggled with Sacramento State for 3.5 quarters. Mm-hmm. And then last week they get blown out. Like, he's absolutely right. I went back and watched some of the game last week that they had. They're not good. And those are two very winnable games for UNLV. And now you're above 500 again. You're going against a team that is projected to win the Mountain West, and it has a great running back, local running back too, which you left slip through your fingers.
Donnell Pumphrey.
And it's like, come on, like this, this is one where you could shock the world. This could be a defining moment for Tony and the rest of the coach staff if they could beat a San Diego State. But you know, they have to beat Idaho first.
I think you gotta worry about Idaho first, because exactly. With Idaho, they're only averaging 12 points a game. Obviously, it's against competition like Washington State and Washington, but they also struggled with an FCS team with their first game, 120-17. So this is a team that should not come in, and we should not have a game, I believe it was like Montana State with Hauk in his final year, where you're fighting tooth and nail to win an FCS school, like I think it was 13-12.
That's horrible.
Yeah, in your fight. Yeah, like I said, you mentioned fighting tooth and nail coming down to the last possession. With Idaho, definitely I want to see I think it's all on the wide receivers and Johnny Stanton, obviously. You have to be able to string together drives. You have to be able to at least put a consistent passing game on the field, because we haven't seen it at least through three games. And you could say that, well, Jackson State threw three touchdowns, but it wasn't consistent because, I mean, the touchdowns were so quick. You right. couldn't really see him put string together play.
So you want to see him have a sustained drive full of completions.
Yes, completions. And like I want to see him work everything. And to be honest, and we kind of touched on this, but I want to see more from the offense in terms of where are the bunch formations. When we have trouble getting Devontae Boyd open, right? Where are the bunch formations so we can run these crossing routes where we can get guys out in space, where you have guys like Darren Woods Jr. or Mekhi Stevenson or Boyd, who's all athletic, all have really good speed. You can get them out in space and make a defender miss. I want to see more different concepts, you know what I mean, from the offense. Not that I'm questioning maybe their offense coordinator, but you would think when you have, like we mentioned the other day, I haven't seen a single screen play.
Yeah, run, I was thinking
and,
about that.
You know what I mean? We haven't seen a one screen. I don't even think we've seen a wide receiver screen.
Yeah.
You know? How much does the wide receiver screen play into the fact that do you trust your freshman wideouts to block for Devontae Boyd downfield? Things like that. But I do want to see more things develop with this offense, because there's talent, but you just want to see him get a little more exotic with it.
Well, yeah, but keep in mind, you have to have the personnel to do that. Mm-hmm. No, I think you have the personnel to run screens. I mean, you can get Lex and you can get Williams.
Well, look at that offensive line. It's much beefier, and they're actually pretty athletic.
Yeah, they can get out and go. I mean, that 85-yard run, you have the guard pulling anyway.
Yep.
So that shows they could get out. I would agree, but I also think you have to have, again, the skill set and the right guys to do it. I don't know if they do, at least this year. Now, that's not saying they're not a good team, because they should beat Idaho, and they should take it to Idaho. I think Idaho State would beat Idaho, and that's not a knock at either school or Idaho State. I know Idaho State, they have some talent. I know the running back they have ran for over 2,700 yards and 50 touchdowns last year. He had 1,000 yards in his first three games down in Southern California. So, and he's a guy that can literally get out and run. He looks like Marky Mark, too. It's crazy. Okay. Name is Mikey Dean. But he's a guy that would be, at a school like UNLV, he would fit in, because he gives another dimension because of his speed. Same thing, that's what Williams brings to the table. But I don't think outside right now, unless you're going to bring some of those other true freshmen into play, you know, you don't have the ability to maybe run that, because, you know, how good of a blocker is Mekhi or Darren? Mm-hmm. You know, that you have to ask yourself that. Now, maybe if you put Holt out wide or Price out wide and bunch him with Devontae, now you could have something there. You know, you can't get creative. I think they will. That's something that Tony did really well at Gorman. You know, he got creative on offense. It wasn't just a ground and pound and playing this normal, you know, type spread offense. You know, it's we're going to get out and we're going to be creative and we're going to run some things. I'd like to see some more trickeration. You know, like if Palandek does move to receiver, like Mike said earlier that he would like to see happen, why not put Mike, flank him out wide, throw him a ball back, and let him try to air one out? You know, I know he doesn't have a huge arm, but, you know, it gives you an opportunity for someone to go make a play.
Just something exotic, yeah. Something a little different than we've seen before, because, like you mentioned, I think the most different thing we've seen out of this offense is Charles Williams lining up out wide and Devontae Boyd lining up inside.
I mean, and it's funny, you text me when that happened too.
It's ridiculous. Defensively, what would you like to see? I think I want to see, obviously, quarterback pressure. I want to see at least I know it's not good to put stats out. Like, I want to see this amount of stuff, but I think two sacks, you have to be able to consistently pressure the quarterback. They haven't been able to do it at this point, and I want to be able to see them blitz and create pressure. You know, even when they blitz guys, you don't see that free runner sometimes that some schools will have or anything like that.
But here's the thing: when you blitz, you're putting your corners and your DBs out on an island. Do you trust your DBs to do that?
But they can't. They don't have a pass rush. So you need. That's what it's all kind of the bigger picture is. If you're gonna, you have to blitz more because you don't have a pass rush. Thus, you have to test your defensive backs, and they have to be able to hold up against pressure. Because if you, the only way you can produce pressure is by blitzing four or five. You know what I mean? Then you're going to have defensive backs trial by fire. You're going to have them line up one-on-one and take care of their guys.
I would agree, but I think when you got McTyer and Mouton, you know, last game they were used and abused, you know, and they got to come back from that. And DBs can only cover for 3 to 4 seconds, realistically. Anything more than that, if they're going to be toast, that's just the bottom line. I mean,
there's some issues sometimes with this team.
Exactly, and I agree. It does come from pressure, but the pressure also makes DBs better. It allows them to cover a little bit longer. I don't care if they get 2 sacks a game from here on out. I want to see consistent pressure and hitting the quarterback, letting him know that we're right here, we're at your feet, or we're at your chest, and we're going to get to you one of these times, and it's going to be a problem. I would agree with some of the blitzes, but you got to be creative with the blitzes, and that's where Coach Bear has to. He really has to be creative in what he does, and I think he can and he will. I think you've seen it. They blitz more against Central Michigan than they did against UCLA. And I'll say this about the defense: early on, they didn't come out like they did against UCLA, where I thought they were scared.
No, for sure. I think it was the first drive or the second drive, McAleenan. It gets him off the field with, like, he just shoots the gap brilliantly and takes down the running back in the backfield. They definitely came to play at least a little bit to start the game.
I'd like to see Brian Keyes get in the game more, number 5. Yep. He was a kid from Fresno. He's got that I'm going to start a riot attitude. He's that guy on a defense that you're like, you have to look over your shoulder, because I'm not going to say he's dirty. He plays hard. And you got to have those guys. I believe firmly with this one, any defense. Your defense is about attitude and it's about swagger. If you have that I don't give a F attitude and you have that we're here to start a riot, or you have 3 or 4 of those guys, or even 2 or 3 of those guys on a defense, that's some mean dudes. That changes an offense's game plan for an offense, because they don't want to go towards that way. So that person, and if they do, they know they're going to pay. And then it comes, you know, you got to have the attitude like, we're not going to let you push us around. You got to develop that swagger and that confidence. And that's something I think the defense needs to do. They've been berated now for at least 2 years under Tony, both years so far, last year and this year under Tony. It's about time that they start playing with that chip on their shoulder. And if they can start doing that, and I understand you may have some guys that again, like, look good in practice, that look good in summer and spring camp, but in game time, they're just not getting it done. But you got a guy you could put in there that will get it done, but it may not look good in practice or in a game or in the camps. Get that guy in there, because all that matters at the end of the day, especially in college football, you know as well as I do, brother, It's wins, wins and losses at this point. And especially when you're trying to get – when you get a new football facility being built and you got a new stadium you're trying to – you need to show why your program is a rising program and why it's looked upon like that by two Power 5 conferences, which is the case in this matter.
All right, so safe to say that we both have UNLV down for a win this Saturday against the Idaho Vandals. Kickoff 6 o'clock at Sam Boyd Stadium.
When's pregame for you?
Pregame for me starts at 4:30 on ESPN 1100 at 100.9 FM.
I'm going to swing by.
Yeah?
I'm going to swing by, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Come hang out with you for a little bit.
So you mentioned it. Let's get into it. Stadium.
Yeah.
Gets passed by up to the legislator up north.
Surprise, surprise.
Sounds like maybe first week of October is what we're hearing with the special legislative session.
Well, first, there's 4 seats or 2 seats that have to be filled by the legislature.
Okay.
They've already called a session for that, I think, the 24th or something. So, like, next week, I believe, they called a session to fill those seats
okay.
to have the special session.
Okay. So, unanimous vote by the Southern Nevada Tourism Infrastructure Committee. I was surprised by the unanimous vote just because of the details of the proposal.
Really?
Yeah. Just because you would think that with $750 million of public sharing, no cap, no public revenue, you would think there would be one person to be like, this is – This is a little like, let's hold up on all this. We don't know if they have a cap. It could be more than $750 million that we're putting down, things of that nature. I just thought there would be one person, especially with all the questions that were being asked at a lot of these. I would think there was one who was like, hey, no. But either way, even if it was just one, it didn't really matter.
Right.
It was going to go up.
Well, I'll say this. I give Commissioner, Steve Sisolak,
yep.
I give him a bunch of credit. He was asking tough questions, wasn't accepting certain answers. Mm. And both breaks that were called, and you had left earlier yeah. in it, both breaks that were called were because he asked some very tough questions that the answers weren't good enough for him, mm-hmm. and they had to renegotiate, and they have a quick meeting to negotiate. I'm not surprised it was unanimous because there was a lot of backdoor meetings going on, way more than what I reported that I told him I wouldn't report. It's a couple of them, like mm-hmm. The night before. I talked to somebody, and he does this for a living, not building stadiums, but he's worked for a number of cities, and they're in major markets. And I had asked, we're talking about the bonds, okay? And that was the thing, if the bonds go into default, mm-hmm. that's when we, the public, have to, shell out some money. And he goes, Joe, the type of bonds they're using for this are 99.9% safe. Mm-hmm. The 0.1%. was Stockton, California, and that's when California went into the recession. And Stockton was already in financial ruins. He's like, "This is not going to backfire. This is actually, in his opinion, a very safe deal for the city, mm-hmm. believe it or not." So he bucks the trend of what's being put out there in red. Look, I'll be very upfront. I'm for the stadium, and I'm for the stadium because it's good for UNLV. Mm-hmm. This gets them in the conversation, and not even in the conversation. This gets them guaranteed meetings with Power Five conferences, and they become, like I said last week, the junior at senior prom. That's the prettiest girl there that wins prom queen. Mm. She goes to that matter. The UNLV jumps to that the front of the line versus a lot of other schools, especially with the football complex being built. That being said, I could care less if the Raiders come. I'm going to be honest. Mm. When I think of Oakland sports, the first team I think of is the Raiders. It's not the A's. It's definitely not the Warriors. And really, Northern California sports, I think of the Oakland Raiders. Mm. But talking to people in their camp prior to and after the meeting, they're full steam ahead of Las Vegas. Their focus is Las Vegas. And I'm excited about them if they do come, because that opens up opportunities on our end as journalists, as sports guys, and at the end of the day, this would put our city in a whole different bracket as far as what it's looked upon.
I'm not anti-stadium. I'm anti how we get there. That's my deal. I understand what a stadium could possibly do for the city. My thing is, how do we get there and how do we fund it and what are we going to do with the money? In terms of the NFL, Roger Goodell already coming out, essentially pumping the brakes, being like, we want to get this done in Oakland. We don't want to see a city lose their franchise. Let's essentially slow down.
I've said this from the beginning on any Periscope. I don't think you've caught any of my Periscopes. Hmm. Listen to what's not being said. He's not talking to Oakland, and he's not talking that it's not going to happen. He's talking to the Nevada legislature and the county commission, which also has to have a two-thirds votes from them as well. I've just found this out this morning. Mm-hmm. He's saying, if you want this to happen, this needs to happen soon, because they had a couple guys in Oakland at the game on Sunday, and they met with some people on Monday, some city officials, to see where things are at. Right now, Oakland's trying to play catch-up. They're way behind the eight ball in this. But the one card that they do have is they're already here. The Raiders are already there. Mm. I was told that Mark is not looking to stay in Oakland, that Mark Davis is trying to bring the team here. Part of the reason, I was told, is that he is very favorable towards UNLV. I almost said, I don't know why I said UCLA, but very favorable towards UNLV.
Well, I'm sure he's favorable to $750 million of public funds too.
Well, absolutely, but he also was like, he understands this could be a lot like his dad has his dad's legacy in the NFL is what he's not just winning in the 70s and 80s and even in the 60s. It wasn't the merger between the NFL and NFL. That's all part of it. But what he did for women and minorities as far as head coaches and front office personnel and people. He's got a beyond what you say about Al Davis the last 10 years of his life where the dementia kicked in. Yeah. And he, you know, I mean, and I'm not making light of Mr. Davis by any means, but like that was it was bad. Yeah. And, you know, and personnel moves, drafting was porous at best. And that's being nice. Mark is trying to make a legacy of his own, and he feels the way he can make his legacy is here in Las Vegas. And he feels that Las Vegas gives him the opportunity to cement his legacy with the Raiders, not being in Oakland and still being under his dad's shadow. Mm. And he thinks that this is the best market for his team. Now, there's fans, and you got people in the writing for newspapers in Reno that use this as a political agenda for their own, you know, writing articles calling Sheldon Adelson Caesar and bowing down to him. It's not like that. This is a business deal for him, for the Raiders, and for UNLV and the city of Las Vegas. You got vloggers in Oakland that for the last 4 years have said Oakland's getting a new stadium. Mm. And now saying Adelson's money is laundered by not Chinese mafia, but basically the Chinese mafia. Okay. You know, like, yeah, it's like, come on, dude. Like, now you're pulling stuff out of air just to throw stuff against the wall, hoping something sticks. Let's be real. This dude's a billionaire. He's entering a business venture. Yes, would it have been nice for him to pay for the whole thing? Absolutely. But billionaires stay billionaires because they make business deals that they don't come out of pocket.
Well, you also have to look at recent history when you get New Meadowlands, when you get Kroenke moving over to LA. I mean, those owners are shelling out everything. You look up at Levi Stadium, it's 98% privately funded.
But look at the markets they're in. Number one, number two, and number four in the country. This is like number 47. So there's a difference media market wise.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a difference between Sheldon Adelson's billions. There's a difference between Sheldon Adelson's billions and Stan Kroenke's. And guess what? Sheldon's got a lot more billions than Kroenke does.
Absolutely. But the thing is, when you have LA as a market, we just compare LA to Vegas, okay? Because it's Rams to Raiders, okay? Look at how many millionaires and billionaires shoot down to Vegas or shoot down to LA or live in LA, Hollywood, Pacific Palisades, wherever you want, you know, wherever you're at, Beverly Hills, they are going to go to that new stadium. And quite frankly, the NFL wanted that stadium there because it's going to house their TV network. Mm. It's going to house a draft, at least one draft, possibly a Pro Bowl, Super Bowls. They wanted that all there. Las Vegas, we don't have billionaires other than maybe casino owners, maybe some, but that, we don't have those guys that are over the top. You know, like, you know, you have some stars that are here that will come out. But the stadium, and this leads to the trepidation by many fans, you know, people that are opponents of the stadium, because we don't have that disposable income in Las Vegas coming in, how is this going to work? Is it just going to be off tourism? Where's the home field advantage? Mm. Raider fans are going to show up anywhere. And everywhere they do, they go to Pittsburgh. They'll fly to Pittsburgh, and they'll be 30,000 strong in Heinz Field, and they're getting into it. And I know their fans could be rowdy. Like we see, I don't know if you've seen the thing on
Plenty
Twitter.
Plenty of videos, yeah. Yeah, the one latest one with the dude flicking the sunglasses.
Yeah,
off.
Yeah, and he's like dancing, flicking. The guy just knocks him out. Well, look at the Rams game. There was.
I mean, it's NFL fans exactly. General. I don't think that's a really big concern. Again, I think like when you get articles like the ones you were mentioning or people just being opposed to it, it's just the fact of how much money it is, and people aren't happy about that. That's the general thing about it. I don't think people are worried about fans because you understand that the NFL is going to come with those kinds of fans no matter what the team is. And if you think otherwise, then you're stupid because, like you said, you can look up Chiefs fight videos, you can look up Bills fight videos, you can look up whatever you want.
Do you think that building this stadium is taken away from education?
Not taken away, but we're definitely not giving it. You could take the money that we were talking about with this tourism tax. It's our money. We can do whatever we want with it. You could put it into education if you want. So I don't think it's taking away. We're just not adding to it.
So for my question would be for the people that are against it because they say we need more money for education because
Keep in mind as well, people probably aren't happy that there's also going to be an increase in the sales tax because we have to fund the police officers if the stadium does come.
I think the police officers are going to be funded anyway. You've seen what happened.
Yeah, I was there for that portion of the SNITIC meeting.
Yeah, you know, but you've seen what happened last night on Monday night at the airport.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so I'm all for a larger police presence in certain areas. But at the same time, if you want to put more money into the educational system, then add a little more to the GL fund, the general fund, you know, add more to it. Because the 0.88% is going solely to the stadium. It's not like they're taking whatever percentage of the monies that the taxes for that fund and putting it all towards the stadium. They're putting less than 1% in the stadium. So to me, I guess it's coming from LA, if to me that's not a big deal. We're down there, I mean, I'm paying an 8.5% tax on anything I purchase. And then the reason why, like my friend, and I use this as an example, athletes will flock to Vegas not because of the nightlife. They'll flock here because there's no state sales tax. Mm-hmm. So in California, people don't know this. There is a 13% athletes tax on top of the regular tax that they pay. So you're paying, that's over 21%. They're coming out of pocket off the rip in California. That's why teams in LA have to overspend, or teams in California have to overspend, because there's that 13% tax that they're losing. And then, you know, people don't realize that those athletes have to pay their attorneys, their agents, then they got their handlers, everybody like that, you know, their entourage, whatever. And even if they have a small one, they still have family that they obligations that they have to take care of, but they're still losing 21% of their income. Coming here, they won't have that. That's going to be a huge get if and when the Raiders do come.
Yep.
That's going to be huge. Reggie McKenzie can sit back and say, "Hey, JVT.
Yeah, no.
We're going to pay you $60 million. You're getting all $60 million, buddy. You're not going to get $41
million." Yeah, definitely. I mean, my personal opinion definitely looks like I think they're going to prove it. I think the winds are blowing that way. We'll see, though. We do have a little bit of time.
I actually, muddling around afterwards, I heard something from some prominent people, which was like, "Well, we got our stadium. Well, we got our stadium," and it's not just Raider people or Sans people. So it was, they know this. I wouldn't say it's a lock, but I'm not surprised. And again, Roger Goodell sent out a memo to all parties involved late July. The memo hasn't gotten out, and it won't get out. But I have seen it with my own eyes, stating to keep this under wraps because they want to make it look like they're working with Oakland as much as possible. So all this stuff, and this is going to happen, all this stuff with Oakland is going to come out, all this stuff with Ronnie Lott's group is going to come out. Ronnie Lott's related to my wife. We've had conversations at family reunions. We haven't talked about this specifically, but Ronnie Lott's a businessman. But when I think of Ronnie Lott, I don't think of the Raiders. I think of the Niners. So yeah, he wants – NFL's not going to be like, "Oh, because Ronnie's in this, we're going to let him buy it." No, it doesn't work that way. They want businessmen, and they want money behind those businessmen, and that's what they'll have here with Mark. They know that the Adelson family and potentially other families like the Fertittas or the Wins or, you know, whomever, they will all be a part of it at some point.
The winds of change are blowing. Inside the Rebels Podcast, Episode 3. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I want to thank Mike Pritchard for coming by. I thought that was some awesome insight. We'll be back again next week.
Next week, we'll have Daryl Howerton. He played at Fresno State. He's their color man. He'll be joining us. And he works for the ESPN affiliate up there.
Cool.
And we'll have Daryl on the phone. And we can talk about a variety of subjects with him. I want you, because you've never done it before with him, ask him about Roger Goodell and his opinions.
Okay.
Because you'll hear Fidel Goodell more than one time come out of his mouth.
All right. Can't wait. All right. Well, that's something for you guys to look forward to. Inside the Rebels Podcast. You'll find it through Twitter. Where do they find you, Joe, at?
At Joe Arrigo, A-R-R-I-G-O, or at Inside the Rebels.
All right. And I'm at me, JVT. You can also hear me weekdays, Monday to Friday, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. That's all we got for you. We will see you next week.
Have a good one.